violence and abuse of power have become so commonplace in South Africa that it takes a lot to shock the public. But there have been a couple of incidents lately. Let us speak to Ian Cameron, the Chair of Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Police and the Democratic Alliance spokesperson also on police. Welcome, Ian.
Thank you, Chris. It's good to be with you. It always feels like I've got a new interesting story, but it's good to be with you.
Firstly, I need to check. If I joked about the police minister, the one on special leave, on the show today, would the Hawks be knocking on my door for committing a crime against the state?
Terrible. You're referring to the Anton Taylor matter. I might not always agree with the things that Anton Taylor says, and personally, I'm not a fan of some of his work. But it really is shocking to see the reaction that was coordinated or allegedly coordinated by Minister Senzo Mtsunu, the previous police minister. And you know what makes it even more shocking, if you look at, for example, the Babita Deokaran case, and you read the book The Shadow State by Jeff Wicks, you see how the Hawks botched that and so many more, but they've got time for nonsense like this and supposedly crimes against the state. It's absolutely ridiculous, ludicrous to say the least, and that they would fly down a team from Johannesburg to come and waste time when there's actual real crime to fight. So proper North Korea style operation, and we must question it in the strongest terms. I have submitted questions to the police minister, Professor Kachalia, this morning, and hopefully we'll see soon what he comes back with regarding the specific incident.
Well, so assassins walk free, but podcasters are targeted for joking. Ian, let's move on to gunmen taking control of a council, a municipal council in Northwest.
Yes, yeah, so I actually like to call it a municipal coup d'etat, it begs the question whether we could expect more on a provincial and even a national level. I think it comes at a very sensitive time for South Africa after the last few weeks and likely the following coming weeks with regards to the instability in the South African Police Service. Now, what happened in this specific case, and this was shared with the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, where it was shared that about 40 gunmen, which, you know, that's not just the gang, took control of the Ramotsere Moalua local municipality in Northwest because of a constant feud between different ANC factions in council. And they literally said that they are security for the mayor that was elected in what seemed to be a bogus council meeting after the previous mayor was supposedly voted out. So, you know, apart from the allegations of bogus meetings and so on, where on earth can you have 40 gunmen walk in and basically take control of a municipality? It was even said to the specific committee that the 40 armed gunmen walked in and they broke into the mayor's office by force. And even though the municipality, specifically the municipal manager, reported cases, they weren't assisted at all. I think there's so many allegations just in the story, and one would need to go and interrogate everything. But it's a very slippery slope if we're moving in a direction where you see this kind of thing happening on a municipal level.
And meanwhile, you get criticized by certain people for using your firearm to defend your own life and those of two MPs.
Yeah, I'm guessing you saw the absolutely ludicrous statement by Mr. Brett Heron from the Good Party, where he literally chooses the side of a criminal, where he clearly shows that he is a supporter of crime, and that, you know, I mean, I take it from who it comes. You can see the organization is in tatters. So without making it a political debate, you can see that they're not going anywhere. In fact, they likely wouldn't have any seat in government very soon. So that's clear. But I assume you also saw the article in Daily Maverick where it was literally saying, so this guy, Vincent Kravochen, writes and he asked the question and he says, it's a moral and ethical debate, you know, whether I should have used the firearm or not. But I always find it funny that you have people acting in this ridiculous way, but they don't question the morals and ethics of the people trying to kill someone with a brick. You know, there was a on Kaya FM on their breakfast show, the one guy speaking or presenter speaking on the show literally said that, you remember that morning I spoke to you, Chris, afterwards, they said that I had left blood on my nose for dramatic effect. Now, apart from there being no blood on my nose, it's funny how when things happen to certain people that doesn't suit someone's political narrative, then they can joke about it. But when it happens to someone else, then suddenly we need to take it seriously. So I really hope, you know, and I sincerely say that I hope that something like that never happens to them and that they don't have to be forced to make a split second decision on whether to pull the trigger or not. If you put me in exactly the same situation today, I would do exactly the same thing. And that's regardless of the small group of armchair critics that would like to sit under a comfortable aircon and criticize, but having never faced such a situation themselves. So yeah, just in terms of the 40 people, the 40 gunmen in Northwest, you know, this is exactly one of the reasons we should fight against the disarming of lawfully armed citizens. If the state, whether on a local, provincial, or national level, cannot guarantee the democratic process to freely move forward in whether on a municipal or provincial level, nationally too, then we need to make sure that you are able to defend yourself. Because if they can't even do those basics right, what guarantee do you and I have that we would be safe at all? So it's very, very important that we defend the existing legislation in terms of firearms. And obviously, regulation does play a role, and it must be done. But it shouldn't be done punitively to the good people that are lawfully armed. It should be to the disadvantage of the illicit firearm owners and those acting in a rogue way.
Imagine what would have happened if you didn't have a firearm to shoot your way out of there.
Well, as I shared with you, I mean, I didn't know if Nicholas was alive or not. When he lost consciousness, there was no time to think, and the attack continued. So despite him having lost consciousness, they didn't stop attacking us. They didn't stop beating us with bricks. You know, my question to idiotic comments like that in Brett Herron's statement was that, you know, and I guess I said it tongue-in-cheek, but it's actually serious, that should I have asked the attackers to just pause for a brief moment, let's have coffee and discuss the motive, and possibly they could help me look for the pieces of my teeth that they had bashed out with bricks. You know, it's an absolutely ludicrous statement. And it astounds me that someone would abuse a situation like that to politic. It just doesn't make sense. So again, as I said, it will not deter us. It certainly won't intimidate us. And if you put me in exactly the same situation today, I would do exactly the same thing. And in fact, I want to go as far as saying that I think this incident prepared us even better for future work. And we won't stop doing our work regardless of whether, you know, it's considered a dangerous area or not.
Ian, now, there's a lot of speculation around the ad hoc committee that has to hear the allegations made by the KZN whistleblowing general. Can you give us an update? There seems to be a lot of manipulation behind the scenes.
Yeah, Chris. So I mean, we have it's been quite a not quite. It's an extremely frustrating process. The terms of reference took far too long to finalize. We eventually got to the point of finalizing them after significant delays because of Parliament, because of Parliament's legal team that took very long. It was then a extremely lengthy meeting to just, you know, get everyone to agree on the terms of reference. And then we continued to see the delays move forward. We just kept on hearing more excuses for things not happening. And now we're already more than a month in since when we could have started work in the beginning of August, and we still haven't finalized the program. And you would have noted in the media this week that General Shadrach Sibiya, during his court bid to reinstate him, he actually said that he is appearing before the ad hoc committee on the 10th of September. And I saw this post by one of the SABC journalists, and I shared it, and I said, this is very interesting because us as the ad hoc committee don't even know about this. Now, you know, I'm a portfolio committee chairperson, and I don't even know about it, even through all the staff and everyone that are there. So how is it possible that he knows this much? So I think it's created quite a bit of distrust or mistrust already within the committee, which is not good. Tomorrow we have a session as a committee to discuss the programming, and I assume it's going to be quite a conflicted type of meeting, just purely because the committee members, many of them feel that we shouldn't, and I agree with them, we shouldn't be hearing these things through the media. I mean, we haven't even finalized the program yet. How can it be that we hear about who's appearing before we know, especially after the committee had agreed that General Mkhwanazi would be the one appearing before the committee first? So it does make it difficult, and it does make it frustrating to say the least. You know, I think in this whole space, now that you've mentioned private firearm ownership and the ad hoc committee and so on, we're really at a time when things feel quite cloak and dagger. And even like in this case with the ad hoc committee, maybe it wasn't deliberate. Maybe there was an honest mistake. The problem is that even honest mistakes at the moment, you know, the lack of trust or everyone kind of being on the edge makes it very difficult to restore trust and good cooperative governance. So it does make it challenging. It's the same with the whole firearm issue with NEDLAC. You know, now we see that NEDLAC is working on firearm legislation. Since when is NEDLAC in any way involved with firearm legislation? They're not mandated to. Why are they doing it secretly? And they're literally stabbing the entire fraternity in the back, and it should be it really deserves all the criticism it gets, and it goes to show that we need to be very careful about who we trust and whether we trust the some of the supposedly mandated in this case even non-mandated people with regards to whether it's legislation or other matters.
Meanwhile, what is happening on your committee? What are the pressing issues that you are having to deal with?
Yeah, so we had our strategic planning session this week. We'll finalize the committee strategic plan next week. Things that came out when the secretariat briefed us in terms of policing policy and what lies ahead of us was the national policing policy, which generally speaking is a very, very good piece of policy. I mean, you'd always find things to criticize in anything. I think it's in the nature of the job as well. But I was impressed with the secretariat, and I must commend them for the work that they've done on that piece of policy. So we worked through that. The things that stood out was the Stock Theft Amendment Act, the IPED Act amendments that are also coming up. So there are a list of quite a few. And then one that I obviously know would be extremely controversial is the listing of the Firearm Control Amendment Bill, especially after this NEDLAC blunder, as well as the pathetic approach by CIRA to try and further regulate the private security industry to the detriment of the good guys and certainly not of the rogue ones. So the Firearm Control Amendment Bill is on the list. I don't have a date yet. We don't know, but it will come to our committee at some stage. But it was interesting to note that it's definitely listed and that it is being anticipated. Obviously, from our side, we'll be ready and make sure that the process is fairly done and objectively done. I need to make sure from my side that we give everyone fair representation and that we don't see this kind of cloak and dagger approach that we've seen from parts of government with, for example, CIRA and NEDLAC, which clearly show that there's a ulterior motive in the way that they've approached it. Put it in plain Afrikaans, hulle is plainweg skelm gewees, you know, is achteraf. And we need to make sure that that isn't done. Even when people agree with legislation that some of us might feel is draconian, we need to give them fair representation and make sure that the rule of law can flourish.
Ian, any other policing issues that you wish to air?
So, Chris, I think the major thing at the moment that is extremely worrying is the bloodbath that we're seeing in the Cape Flats. We know that gang violence has been ongoing, but the increases that we've seen over the last few months is just astounding. You know that in the top 30 stations in the Western Cape over the last month of August, we saw over 300 people being murdered. Now, I must be honest, and it might sound cold of me, but when gangsters shoot each other, that's on them. But what bothers me is the exposure of all these children, young people and innocent people experiencing this violence and how it's just a completely abnormal situation. The impression is given that the police are doing what they can, but to be honest with you, they're not. They don't have the capacity even if they wanted to. And it just highlights the fact that we need more policing powers to be given to the city and to the province. If we don't do that, I honestly think things will get worse. It does feel to me like there's some kind of a build-up that they want to destabilize it to a point. And then before the election, they'll come out and say, we're deploying the military now to try and resolve it. You know, almost as though it must seem like they are like they're now fixing it and they've got control of the situation. But that's not a sustainable model. We need to fix the policing model. And the only way, in my opinion, to do that, apart from capacitating SAPS properly, is making sure that, for example, the city of Cape Town can properly also investigate gang-related gun crime, that they are able to do ballistic testing, that they are able to do forensic testing, that they are able to do firearm destruction. There are so many positive things that can be done. But if we don't change the political mindset of this constant power struggle, then we can't expect things to change. So I think that's probably one of the things that bothers me the most at the moment, where it's just this continuous bloodshed and so many innocent people are getting killed in the crossfire.
So many children too. Thank you. That was Ian Cameron, Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Police Chairperson, speaking to BizNews, and I am Chris Stain. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you, Chris.